Well, he writes the songs, but he certainly also has sung them over the years. Barry Manilow's had 3 number one hits, 16 top tens, more than 50 top 40, adult contemporary hits, sold more than 80 million albums worldwide over more than 4 decades. And while he's not calling it quits exactly, he doesn't plan to tour again. In February, Manilow, who is now 71, started his One Last Time tour, so named because he swears this is it for touring. And this weekend, he'll make one of his 27 tour stops at the MGM Grand Garden Arena. We should also note that earlier this week, it was reported that Barry Manilow was married late last year. He's here with us now. Barry Manilow, welcome to KNPR.
Thank you, Dave.
It's good to have you here. Your tour is commemorating the 40th anniversary of your first number one hit, Mandy, which is just, even today, it's a killer song. Still, I mean, people can still hum it without any difficulty at all. But between you and me, have you gotten kind of weary of singing it?
No, Dave, no. As a matter of fact, people ask me, what's your favorite song? And usually I say, could it be Magic, because it was even before Mandy.
Mm.
But these days, I tell you, Mandy is probably my favorite one. Not just because it's a beautiful song and a terrific record, but it represents so much to me that it's become more than just a pop song to me. I was so young when I made this record. I didn't know what was about to happen to me. My life exploded into a million pieces a month after Mandy came out, and it means so much to me these days. I think it is now my favorite song out of the entire catalog.
Even over Could It Be Magic? I mean, you got Chopin,
they've all got something for me. But because Mandy represents the beginning, I think it wins.
Mm. So what are some of the other favorites from the catalog?
Well, you know, I'm crazy about all of them. They've all become more than just songs. I look out at the audience when I do Copa, and these people are so happy when I do this song. How could I ever get tired of singing these songs?
Most people would think touring the country to perform day after day and seeing generations of adoring fans, you know, dancing to Copa or so many of your other songs would be the ultimate life experience. But this is your last tour?
Well, it's the last big tour. I'll be making records, and I'll probably be doing one-nighters here and there. But these tours, I've been roaming the earth for 40 some odd years, and after a while, I just got to put the Toomey luggage away. And I've always had my Toomey luggage out. I never put it back in the closet because I'm always packing, and it got to me. I got to stop. And so I'm stopping the big touring, but I'm not stopping performing or making records.
Yeah. Is it such old hat at this point when you're touring that you don't have to prepare much? Do 71?
Well, when I go out on the road, I always create a different concept for the shows. I never do the same concept. Certainly I do the same songs, but there's always a different idea for each time I go out. So that's what keeps it fresh for me.
So how do you keep your voice fresh?
I tell you, I don't consider myself a singer. I know that's the craziest statement you can get from me, but I've never considered myself a singer, so I pay no attention to warming up or, drinking tea or vaporizing. It's never really, I consider myself a musician. The singing thing was a big surprise, and I just, when I'm in the wings, ready to go on, I say to myself, I wonder what's going to come out of my mouth tonight.
Have you ever had shows where what comes out is just not what you were hoping it would be?
Well, the only thing that stops me is bronchitis. Every singer will tell you that. And the few times that I've gotten bronchitis, well, we usually have to cancel the shows. And the few times that I've tried singing with bronchitis, it just doesn't work. Every singer will tell you that. It just stops you from singing. But other than that, I've been pretty lucky that, because I've got great monitor people that that give me the right mix in my ears, and I'm pretty good shape.
Yeah. A few years ago, Elvis Costello played Las Vegas while he was touring to promote a new album, and it was this interesting quirk. He played songs from that album in other cities, but in Las Vegas, he pretty much only performed the hits. And I guess it was because the venue thought that was what the audience here wanted to hear. From your experience, is the Las Vegas crowd different from audiences across the rest of the country?
No, no. Vegas has been great to me. I opened, I know I'm playing the MGM Grand, but and that was the first place I ever played. And when I was on the road back in, I think it must have been the late 70s, they booked me, maybe early 70s, maybe like 75 or something. They booked me at the MGM Grand. I was the opening act for Helen Reddy. And we did 2 weeks there, and the audiences and me got along just great. And then, as you might know, I did 7 years at the Hilton and at the Paris, and I just loved it. It was one of my favorite gigs ever, being in residence at the Hilton and at the Paris.
All right, so this weekend at the MGM Grand Garden Arena, are you going to play obscure songs when you're performing?
No, I don't. No, the audience doesn't want to hear obscure songs. I mean, my dear fans, they would love to hear obscure songs, but the bulk of the audience really wants to hear the songs that they have grown up with or they know, and I'm happy to do it for them. As a matter of fact, on this tour, not only am I doing the ones that I usually do, which are, I Write the Songs and Copa and Can't Smile Without You and It's a Miracle and Even Now and This One's for You, but I'm also trying to do even the songs that I didn't usually do on the road, like Ships, or Read 'Em and Weep, or Some Kind of Friend, or Somewhere Down the Road. I don't usually do those, but I'm throwing all of them in. Let's Hang On. And I'm just doing as many of the ones that made it on the radio as I can.
We're talking with Barry Manilow. 80 million albums worldwide, hits over 4 decades. This weekend he's at the MGM Grand Garden Arena, one stop on what he says is his last tour ever, at least his last big tour ever. Early in your career, you were the house pianist at a New York bathhouse, accompanying, among others, Bette Midler. On the other hand, singing or even being nudged into performance goes back a little further than that. And this is something you've played at your shows here and I'm sure elsewhere as well. This is the recording called Sing It with your grandfather from when you must have been just a toddler.
Hi. I have to work. Come on. Sorry.
What?
I have to work for you. Sing. I have to buy
Come on. Now, I listen to that. I'm thinking, Barry, you were shy.
Well, I was very young.
Sure.
But, Grandpa was the first part of my family that got it. He got the fact that I have music in me. And every Saturday afternoon, he would take me to Times Square, where he had found this record your own voice booth. And you'd put a quarter in the thing, and you'd stand there, and you could either talk or you could sing, and then they would give you back a scratchy little record. And that was that scratchy little record, and I started my very first album off with that Sing It cut.
Yeah, you and Grandpa Joe Manilow.
Yep.
I'm starting to think he got it, of course, early on, but sounds like it's less chance that you became a singer and maybe more something that's kind of preordained.
I never considered myself a singer. I knew that I was going to be in music, and my goal was to either be an arranger or a composer or a producer, and I did that a lot for a lot of people, but never a singer. Never, ever thought about singing. But those were the days where the singer-songwriters were becoming very, very popular. And when I made my first few demos, I sang my demos because I couldn't afford a real singer. So I sang my demos, and by some miracle, I got an offer to make a whole record. When I told Bette that I got an offer to make a record, she said, "Doing what?" I said, "Singing." She said, "You don't sing." I said, "I do now." And that's how it all started with me becoming a singer.
Did you know some of the songwriters of that era in New York? The Brill Building folks, Carole King, Man and Wild?
That was before me. The Brill Building was in the 60s. I started in the 70s.
Okay, so you just kind of missed that wave. And yet, you caught your own wave, with Mandy and I Write the Songs, and then a little bit later, Copacabana, and so many other hits. You know, what do you think it was where you hit the creative apex at the right time and caught that wave as you did?
You know, I've never quite figured that out. You know, I listened to Mandy, and I do remember the day that I recorded it. Clive Davis found that song. It was called Brandy when he gave it to me, and it was a rock and roll song. And I recorded it just like the demo that Clive gave me, and I sounded terrible on it because, I wasn't a rock and roll singer. But I learned this song, only I changed all the chords around, and I made it into a ballad. And I showed it to Clive, and he went, "Do it like that." So I did. I sat at the piano. We changed the name from Brandy to Mandy because there had been a song called Brandy a year before that. And I played it and sang it. And that's the record. We added strings and a big backbeat later on. But the record of Mandy is one take with me sitting at the piano and singing it.
Now, a lot of people, your fans know about the Very Strange Medley, but
yeah.
a lot of people don't know what that's about, which is you having a hand in writing a lot of jingles that many of us remember, you know, State Farm, Band-Aid, and you know, Dr. Pepper, so many other things you had a hand in. How did those come about?
Well, you know, like I say, I wasn't really into aiming for a singing career, and being a musician and a songwriter, I got lucky and got a call asking me if I wanted to try out to do a commercial. And the first one they gave me was a Dodge car or something, and they gave me the lyric. It was called Dodge Depend on It, and I wrote a melody to Dodge Depend on It my first time out, and I got it. And from then on, I kept getting phone calls from the advertising agencies to keep writing jingles. And boy, that paid the rent for a couple of years there because it's a very lucrative career.
Yeah, oh, certainly is. Is there anybody out there today who reminds you of yourself as you were getting started in the mid-70s?
Well, you know, I got my own little piece of the pie, but I think Bruno Mars has got a lot of the kind of thing that I love doing. He's a real entertainer. They're great melodies that he's doing, and I think he's the real deal.
Yeah. How do you want to be remembered, Barry Manilow?
I'd like to be remembered as the guy that made you feel. That made you feel something. That's all I really care to do. I just want to connect with an audience, and I hope my music has made people feel good.
Yeah. Is it true that Bob Dylan called you an inspiration?
Well, he said, "Keep doing what you're doing, man. We're all inspired by you." It was a very important moment. You know, maybe he was loaded. I don't know. But I remember him saying this, and those were during the days that I was getting killed by the critics. And to have Bob Dylan say that to me, it was a very, very important moment.
Loaded or not, it still counted. It surely did. Barry Manilow this weekend plays at the MGM Grand Garden Arena. It's one of 27 stops, so what he says is his last concert tour, but hopefully not his last set of times performing. Barry, it has been a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us.
This has been great, too. Thank you very much, Dave. Bye-bye.